This concurrent session will continue with the mental health theme, which has been very prevalent at this seminar. We've got Rebecca and Catherine and Karen as well, who are going to be talking about their insights on a trial that they've been involved in, where behavioural insights were used in case management to help improve recovery outcomes for injured New South Wales police officers. I'll quickly introduce Rebecca and Catherine. Sorry, Karen, I don't have your notes in front of me, so you'll have to introduce yourself afterwards, maybe. Rebecca is a leader in program and program manager, skilled at implementing behavioural strategy with qualifications in psychology and business. With over 12 years of experience in leadership roles within the personal injury industry, Rebecca has passionately led teams towards greater job satisfaction and increased customer centricity and schemes towards greater financial sustainability. Rebecca is most proud of her work in driving for change in the Police and Emergency Services TMF portfolio, using customer-focused segmentation and greater client support via investment in techniques including motivational interviewing and behavioural insights. Rebecca currently leads a home building compensation reform program within the New South Wales State Insurance Regulatory Authority, CIRA, as program manager. Catherine has been Chief Executive of EM Life since December 15. With over 15 years' experience in personal injury claims management, commencing in claims with Cambridge Integrated Services before moving to WorkSafe Victoria. Since 2012, Catherine has held numerous leadership roles with EML. Catherine held the position of Claims Operations Manager for the Police and Emergency Services portfolio, supporting over 2,000 medically retired police and fire officers, predominantly suffering from PTSD, before being appointed as CEO of the newest entity in the EML group, EM Life. Catherine now leads a team of life claims specialists who dedicate their services to helping life insurer partners exceed customer expectations, recovery outcomes, and achieving financial sustainability. Her particular leadership passion is in empowering claims professionals, creating an environment where they are safe and skilled and supported to make life easier for their customers. Please welcome Rebecca and Catherine. Who's going first? Rebecca.
Thanks, Amanda. Good morning. It's really great to be here today with Catherine and Karen backing me up on the stage. I've worked and had the privilege, really, of working with these two leaders in my time in EML, particularly in the work that we did and that I was able to do with the support of both Karen and Catherine in the trial that started the work that we're talking about today. I've been inspired by both of them. They're really values-based leaders and quite visionary. They both have great strength and compassion and for our clients and for our teams, and they're both really committed to testing innovative approaches and really empower their people, and I've had the great privilege of being one of those people. So it's lovely to be here with both of you today, and thank you for all the great work that you do. So I am here to take you through the first part of the presentation today, a little bit of background on the initial trial that we ran in the medically discharged police portfolio back in 2015. I'll hand over to Catherine halfway through, and Catherine will tell us more about the work that's currently underway in EML and in MLife that carries on from that work in 2015. So what is behavioural insights or behavioural economics? Has anyone heard of the nudge? Read any? Yeah. So behavioural insights aims to use established knowledge from sciences and economics to build models that we can use to mobilise human behaviour. So the nudge came out of the Thaler and Sunstein book in 2008 called Nudge. And the overall message of that book was about the ability to make small contextual changes that can actually have a really big impact on communities. And the method that they explained to use to do that is choice architecture. So this choice architecture is an approach where all choices are available to the user or the client, But we make one choice the clear carrot choice, and it is really, in my view, choice architecture is really using the carrot in a much more informed and effective way than using the stick, which is the more traditional method of getting people to behave in the way we want them to. So how did EML start with this program? We were approached by the BI team from the Department of Premier and Cabinet. The UK has really been on the forefront of innovation in behavioural economics and behavioural insights, and the DPC in New South Wales had a couple of team members come out from the UK and join on secondment the team there at DPC in New South Wales to build their behavioural insights team. And that team approached Karen back in 2014 or even earlier, maybe 2013, and started to talk about what are the really complex areas in our portfolios that we would want to test and that we could see some benefit might be achieved through using the behavioural insights approaches. It was very clear to us in 2014 that we had some real wicked problems in the medically discharged police portfolio. Most tellingly, at the end of 2014, the actuarial projections were indicating that we needed to estimate for life for anyone who was medically discharged, which meant, on a personal level, that any police officer medically discharged in New South Wales was unlikely to ever become independent again. So we ran this trial so that we could aim to improve the lives of those medically discharged officers, and there was over 1,000 of them at the time that we were responsible for, to improve the lives of their families, our communities, and by doing that, to protect the sustainability of the fund, which was at risk at that time. In 2014, we had some big challenges in EML in protecting our people and also supporting these medically discharged officers. We found a lot of disengagement in the portfolio. Individuals who were really in a very complex financial system, who had come from a very complex environment of the New South Wales Police, and who most often were struggling day to day with symptoms of PTSD. So this situation led to a real lack of trust, and I know Catherine's going to talk a bit more later about the impact of trust. Trust being present and absent has a huge impact on our ability to help through case management. So, and this was spilling out into social media, which put our case managers at risk, and it was a situation that was really spiralling quite seriously out of control. So at this time, Catherine and Karen and I had this exciting opportunity to try and shift this portfolio from being one running out of control and with huge social impact to trying to a different approach to support. So what did we do? We worked with Alex Ghiani from the Behavioural Insights team in DPC to develop and implement a modified randomised control trial where we had half of the medically discharged case managers running the interventions and half continuing to work on business as usual case management. So the trial aimed to test a case management approach that used these interventions based on behavioural science. Some of these involved these three we've got here. So courtesy calls, the idea here was to change from an agenda-driven approach with our case managers calling and chasing paperwork or chasing updates to shifting that relationship to one more focused on support. And we recommended, after a few iterations of different ways to try and approach this, we found that most often it worked well with a case manager opening with, "What can I do for you today?" And case managers were quite surprised by how much they got back with using this approach as opposed to a really directed agenda-driven approach. The centrepiece of the trial was really this My Recovery Plan, so a person-centred approach to planning, which replaced the traditional injury management planning approach that we had used. And the intent was to develop personalised goals and to draw on some of what we know the NDIS are using around engaging more with community and family before applying additional services. And we trained our case managers a little bit differently. We used the evidence from Carol Dweck's research on the power of your mindset to help our case managers have more positive mindsets about their ability to change the lives of their clients, and then also to help their clients change their mindsets about the likelihood of recovery. So we also use this little nifty EAST framework, which I recommend having a look at if you're not aware of. We use that to help tailor our written comms. So we did training to help our case managers communicate more effectively, and we overhauled our written comms to reflect that relationship we were looking to develop. You can see the letters on the right are quite different to what you would normally see in the context or what we were seeing at the time, which was long, complex letters, heavily legalistic, and by the end of reading one, as an informed individual, you were sometimes not sure what the point was. So the intent of these letters was to make it really clear, using colour, blocking and eye-tracking research, to help our clients who are also struggling with illness and injury to be really clear really quickly on what the intent of the communication was. So the trial ran for 9 months in 2015, and we achieved quite a bit in a short period of time. 446 people were started to use the different approach of the My Recovery Plan with client-centred planning. We introduced the courtesy calls, and we took an iterative approach with that. Because of the lack of trust, there wasn't necessarily an appetite to have a phone call every week from your case manager. So case managers worked respectfully with their clients to figure out what the right frequency of contact would be. And through that respectful process, we saw that stronger relationships were developed. We improved our case manager satisfaction at work. So the internal engagement survey results improved. We kept more of our staff, which was good news for us, good news for their peers, and good news for our clients who didn't have that churn of change of case managers. And we also changed, there was also a sense of a new, refreshed mindset in the whole department. So there was a bit of a tension throughout the trial in how we would demonstrate the success of the trial. There were hopes that we would, at the end of 9 months, have some financial outcomes. We did see improved return to work results, but this was across both the intervention and the control. So in order to draw out a little bit more what the results of the trial were, we email invested in a qualitative review, so a process evaluation, and that was completed by the George Institute for Global Health. And the George Institute's finalised their review with a report in June this year. A process review is becoming more accepted as an essential component of assessing complex interventions such as this, and the George Institute regularly conduct this type of assessment. The evaluation was carried out using multiple modalities. There were face-to-face interviews with clients, with staff, surveys, literature review, and a review of de-identified data and information from the trial. Of 100 clients that were invited to interview, 14 accepted, and of 22 staff who were invited to interview, 9 accepted, and the outcomes of those semi-structured interviews became part of the final report. So what did the George Institute find as the trial outcomes? They found that we were successful in the growth mindset in case managers. Case managers really took on this education around growth mindset and neuroplasticity, so the ability for the mind to change itself. This was reflected as being well adopted and affected both the personal views and the professional views of our case managers. Case managers were really engaged in the BI approach. Both case managers in the intervention and the control groups, who by this stage, when the George Institute were doing their evaluation, the program was being implemented into business as usual. So at this point, both had received training, and both reported being really engaged, supportive and positive about this being the new approach to case management for this portfolio. The case managers who were interviewed from the intervention reported higher levels of job satisfaction than the business as usual control case managers. And there was really good evidence of client empowerment. The intervention clients described good relationships with their case managers and explained that this was because they felt that they had choice and support, which was really exciting because that's what we were hoping to achieve along with the values of the NDIS and what we were thinking about in development. We wanted to help clients feel that they had more choice and support because we know that leads to better positive long-term outcomes. They didn't feel unduly pressured to increase work or to change the type of work they were doing, which was how they had felt in the past. We had some challenges, though. Family and friends' engagement in the process was limited. Case managers were really unsure and nervous about how to best involve clients' family, and this is an area that I know EML are continuing to think about. And some case managers continued to deal with family members rather than the injured individual directly, which when we took on the portfolio was the norm. So we had, at the start of EML's involvement with this portfolio, we had very limited direct contact with our clients, and the case managers are still working through that trust process. So some are still working with partners, support people rather than the individuals themselves, which creates challenges. There was evidence of more involvement with stakeholders, but case managers described this being an ongoing challenge. So service providers are really unsure about how involved case managers should be, and there is an issue of trust, not only case manager to client, but also between case manager and service providers. Clients reported fewer changes in case manager in the intervention, which is really important, we now know, to clients. And there was really strong evidence of clients noticing an improvement in the way case managers worked with them over the period of the trial. So there was an overall impression that I took from the report that we really need to take a long view when we are working with complex portfolios like this one, and that EML really have had great foresight in investing in this process evaluation and not pulling up stumps at the point where we realised at the end of the trial we couldn't, based on data and quantitative evaluation, decide whether this had been positive or not. So I am really grateful for EML's investment in the George Institute's process evaluation. I was a project manager at the time, so it was really important to me. I could see it was working and I wanted to make sure that we demonstrated that. So thanks to EML for doing that. I'll now hand over to Catherine, who will explain how EML started to implement the learnings following the initial trial.
Gosh, I wish you could stay and work the clicker for me, but that's okay. We'll see how we go. Best one. All right. Hi, everybody. So, recommendations. The beauty of investing in the George Institute report was that they've given us this incredible roadmap now for how we continue to evolve this process with sort of confidence and evidence, and now that we can implement it at scale across this and other complex and long duration portfolios. So we're very fortunate to have the report. I echo Beck's comments then. So just a little overview of the key recommendations from the George and the progress that we've made. So the first was around the My Recovery Plan. This was a really complex PTSD portfolio, medically discharged police officers who, I guess, unfortunately, had years of being told and reassured by really credible sources that PTSD was incurable and that they wouldn't recover. And so the feedback that we received was that some participants found completing a recovery plan painful and frustrating because they strongly believed they wouldn't recover, and they'd spent years trying to convince us that they wouldn't recover. And so it really challenged them and their trust in us as credible partners in their work injury. And so a lot of these recommendations, a lot of the George's recommendations, are really about enhancing that trust equation and the trust that customers have in their case management partners. And more than that, the trust that the family network has in case management partners, because having the trust of just the customer doesn't work when their partner says, yeah, but remember 2 years ago when they did XYZ to you. So that was a real challenge and continues to be a real challenge, but developing that trust with the customer and their family network is critical. So a lot of these recommendations I see do relate to deepening that trust equation. So that's credibility, reliability and intimacy over self-orientation. So the first, My Recovery Plan, plays really critically to credibility. And so reasonably simple process to implement those recommendations. It was a rebrand. It's a wellbeing plan. Okay, no worries. But we get to maintain the intimacy. So the wellbeing plan still has the photograph of the case manager on it. It still has shared goals. And we get to expand as well the scope of what we can include in a wellbeing plan, as well as the training that's available for case managers about goal setting, because that had been particularly challenging, goal setting outside of the mandate of the scheme. The second, increasing family contact as well as engaging with service providers, so plays to credibility and intimacy with family contact. And it relates obviously directly then to the third recommendation, the second is about communication strategy face-to-face. I should use the slides there, not the ones I've printed, because clearly mine are older. Right, all good. Back on track. So the communication strategy face-to-face, as well as engaging with the family and the service providers. So these often work together. Really very pleased to say that just this year, EML have conducted 65 face-to-face visits, which... rough calculation is quite a nice percentage, just under 10% of the portfolio, and is, I guess, very relevant to the specific needs and readiness of that customer, as well as being able to include family and community in those face-to-face. So we've got a really deepening of the intimacy and the partnership, but also not just with the customer, also with their family unit, which is really critical. In addition, EML have invested in three psychologists that work in-house to support case managers in their interactions with treating providers. And so it's about skilling up and making safe and capable the case management portfolio, but also making sure they're credible in those conversations with treaters who are so influential in influencing wellbeing as well as recovery where it's possible. So what do we got? Four and five are about information. So information about services are available and information about EML and our role. And again, really, really critical, playing to reliability and to credibility. And so EML have invested heavily in enhancing the information that's available and the format of the information available, because that was another recommendation about the way people interact with pretty complex content, and also working with police, continuing to work with police very closely on how we enhance the medical discharge process and make it a transition that is positive and can be enabling rather than, a loss of an identity. And so we have now a new a journey that demonstrates the police's process from being an active police officer through to a discharged police officer and their life beyond policing, as well as EML's role at different parts of the journey. We have a booklet of services that's been developed to outline the services, services that are available. We have career services brochure that's in development and is shortly to commence use. So all of these things since the George report have come out that we've been able to continue this process and have continued investment in enhancing this process, which is exciting. Yes, I got everything on that page. Cool. 15 minutes. All right. So in 5 minutes. I've been really fortunate in the last 2.5 years to be able to pick up this model and to take it now to life insurance. And so 2.5 years ago, we packaged this up as a complex and long duration claims management model, and we were able to pick the interventions that felt right. So this was obviously long before we had any of the results out. We hadn't done the actuarial review, we hadn't done the George review yet, but the interventions that socially felt right and we could see were empowering to our case managers and engaging to the customers, and we felt that that was absolutely the indicators that we need and the platform we needed to get a better return to work and recovery outcome and scheme independence outcomes. And so because we quite like a challenge at EML, we thought we'll take this to 4-year plus disability income claims. Why not? And we have confidence, of course, that we'd seen it work and seen change occur within such a difficult PTSD portfolio that we felt confident it would have applicability. And fortunately now we have the evidence to support that a lot of those interventions were very relevant. So to our client, our first life insurer client, who I hope is in the room, we're very, very grateful to the opportunity that you gave us to embed in a scale, very deep way, this operating model that embeds behavioural economics as well as the skills that case managers need to be able to enhance life outcomes for customers on the scheme. So really quickly, embedding BI into our operating rhythm was particularly relevant to the growth mindset. So when you're working on such complex claims, you can go for weeks at a time without a, you know, historically defined positive outcome, without a return to work, without a recovery or a cessation from the scheme. And so that's challenging for case managers to turn up every day and continue to work so hard in a proactive outbound way. So growth mindset built into our Monday, Wednesday, Friday huddles. So instead of, as we had in the trial, doing it as individual reflections and one-on-one reviews, we did it as a group, and that was what I mean by sort of taking the what felt right. It felt right learning as a group, setting strategy on a Monday, reflecting on the skills that we needed and learning on a Wednesday, Wisdom Wednesday. We love a little catchy title, unlike the title of this presentation, as we observed before, Wisdom Wednesday, and then Friday, Reflection Friday, which is about how have we progressed, what have we learnt, what will we learn next week, and celebrating successes. And they can just be very small successes, but that mean a huge amount, including that somebody has, for the first time, engaged with us in a way that is personal and not transactional. So they've told us something about their lives, about their dog, about their husband, about the fact that they like paddleboarding, about something that is not related to the claim. So we embedded growth mindset into our operating rhythm, and then we embedded some of the other interventions. Courtesy calls, call them hug calls now, how are you going, H-U-G, hug calls. And they're about, and specifically designed to only talk about the human and their life and their life situation, and we're not allowed to talk unless they prompt it about the claim. And they've been so incredibly powerful then in building trust, and where we can't, also using courtesy cards and using that, embedding that in mindfulness. So first of all, developing the trust and the growth mindset through courtesy calls. Then once we have that trust, giving case managers the skills through motivational interviewing. And we have a baseline rate of about 2.8 out of a maximum of 4 for our case managers. Every case manager is proficient in motivational interviewing, and we have a customer care manager that leads that, as well as a trainer at a rating of 4 in each engagement to be able to maintain that process. progress. Was MI that we rolled out when we were in the police portfolio was one of the reasons why George had a little bit of trouble working out that this might have had, that the trial had an impact, because we rolled it out across the whole business, and it did blur the lines of the randomisation a little, but it works. And of course then once we have the trust, the growth mindset and the skills, then we can have these deeper interventions of recovery planning. And embedding broader social prescription and all of the life domains, not just recovery, not just well-being, but social, community, health, and there's another one that, of course, escapes me. Okay, Scott Morenzing. So I think I'm going to run out of time. So just a really quick overview of in life what it was able to achieve. So we're very proud of our return to work results. They're 5 times industry average, which includes workers' compensation for 4-year-plus claims. That it does deliver reserve release. Not everybody believes us, but nevertheless, if you put customer experience at the forefront and you put their life and their participation in their life at number one, then the results follow. And really, in complex and long-duration claims, it's the only way forward to get a sustainable outcome for that person. So it delivers reserve release. We were able to increase our engaging interactions. So these are interactions that have nothing to do with the claim. They're about the person and their life, from 7% to 97%. That is 7% is typical in any long-duration portfolio, so there's no negative connotation there, but we were very proud in 12 months of turning so quickly a portfolio that didn't have a huge amount of trust. And we're very proud of the unprompted compliments, so including one which was a painting that one of the customers had completed in a course that we'd supported with some paints that we'd purchased for them, and we were very proud, and we have that painting now in the office. And we were thrilled to be recognised by Aluka and Swiss Re for excellence and innovation in our return to work award. So it is applicable to life. It's applicable to complex and long duration portfolios anywhere, because human to human interactions and complex life situations benefit from deeper engagement and a partner to help you navigate the world, and that is there just for you. So Beck, given we have, I think, no time left, because I'm sure that there are some questions, I might not talk to these points in much detail so that we can open for questions. But I guess they're just generally options for you to consider as industry leaders about investing long-term in long-term solutions and the opportunity that we have with funding for investment in long-term results with long-term partners, we think is very, very exciting. But also expanding our mandate. Can we expand out of work-relatedness? Can we expand out of the particular disabling cause to support that whole person and their community to achieve some independence and a better life outcome? So just opening those up to points, but I might leave it there.
So I'll give you guys this mic, and I'll come around with this mic. I'm sure there are a lot of questions. I just wanted to say that I love the idea of the Monday, Wednesday, Friday huddle. I think I might implement that at home. Sounds really good.
You need a whiteboard. Okay, we're obsessed with whiteboards.
Right, okay.
And coloured pins.
Okay, the kids will love that.
And one of the corners of the whiteboard has to have a heart on it, which is for Love Week.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
It works. It gets results.
Awesome. Who would like to kick off with a question? I'll come back to you. And please just identify yourself too for the audio tape.
Daniel Keating. Other than the increased contact, can you give an example of some of the choices? So you talked at the very beginning about the choice structure and providing a choice that was a clear carrot. Could you give a few more examples of the differences in the way you actually presented options to the injured people?
Historically, in workers' compensation, we tell people
if you don't do what I say, I'll cut off your benefits. That has been, I suppose, a cultural shift that we have been moving towards in EML, moving away from in EML, but this program helped us to have a vehicle to do that. And all of the interventions were focused on removing the stick approach and rather helping people through better communication, verbally, but also written communication. So, for example, in written communication, you would use the EAST framework to help people understand what a benefit of an adaptive choice would be. So, for example, if we were sending a letter to someone about engaging with pre-vocational rehab, we would put some information in there to say people who have engaged with pre-vocational rehabilitation have had 50% better return to work outcomes. So we're not telling them they have to engage in this program, but we are giving them some positive information that lets them understand what the benefits of making that choice would be. So rather than saying, in the past we might have said, you must attend this and if you don't, I'll cut off your benefits, which may or may not have been true, but it was definitely terminology that would be used, so creating a really fear-based relationship which disempowers clients. So rather we asked our case managers verbally and created letters that enabled positive choices in the first instance, so creating a carrot in the first instance, while knowing that if need be, we could escalate towards the stick. But that is, I think, one of our lessons and comments here as well, is about how do we create schemes with a value base that means that we help people rather than rely on legislation to hit people into compliance.
Sam Vuller. What do you BI has been around now for quite a few years. What do you think is the key thing stopping insurers, our schemes, from investing in this kind of approach?
I think that we're all very busy just doing our jobs. We're all very busy sort of fighting the fires of the difficulties within the portfolio. And I think that making any of these changes, and particularly the sort of behavioural economics piece, is about measuring whether it makes a difference, measuring whether you get an economic benefit from it. That takes time and energy and money to do. And the study that we, this study, while DPC provided some thought leadership to the program, EML needed to commit a significant amount of money to have Beck as our project manager, and a huge amount of leadership support to run a controlled trial. It's really hard work running a controlled trial, and it needs a huge amount of support from management to get to the end of it. And I think for that reason we don't do a lot of these studies, because it's really hard work. It's really hard work. And so you need money and you need management support. And a lot of insurers don't have, a lot of the claims agents, for example, which is where all this work actually happens, don't have money, or they don't commit money to innovation. And so I think that's why these type of studies are few and far between.
I just wanted to add to that. I think it's not necessarily about insurers, but for me, behavioural insights is about a different approach to public policy. So it starts, in my view, at a holistic public policy review. So I would ask those who are responsible for public policy in the states, in Australia, to that question. Why are we not looking at this more seriously from a public policy perspective? Why is it up to insurers?
And I'll pile in as well. I think, to Karen's point, that you, to be able to get this sort of investment, the effort that it takes, and to get to the results, I mean, we're 3 years in and, or more than that now, 4 years in, and we've just got some results, that we need that. We need that to be able to convince senior management that the investment is worthwhile, because there is a perception that with such complex and such long duration claims that there is actually nothing yet you can do to change the outcomes, and that they are just going to cost you a huge amount of money forever, and you can put a lot of your talent and resources into trying to fix it and you won't win. So we're thrilled now to have the results to prove that actually there is a great return, that you can get it. We're not yet seeing that return in the police portfolio, but it's the hardest in the world. I just can't reiterate how tough it is. But in other very complex, tough portfolios, you can get a great return for this type of intervention.
I'm really sorry, but we've run out of time. So if anyone does have questions, I know these three ladies are very approachable, so please come and find them in the next break. But could you please remember to fill in your presenter feedback and put your hands together for Rebecca, Catherine and Karen. Thank you.